podcast. I'm Rob Murphy, and the week that was on the podcast, yes, on this feed, each week we give you some of the highlights from patreon.com/Mayo podcast on a busy Mayo season. There's no better place to be to get your feed of everything you need to know and keeping up to date with all the news. It is a busy season, John Gunnigan.
It sure is, isn't it, Rob? And we could say it's a week off at the seniors. Of course, it isn't. They've been at it hammer and tongs behind closed doors, but no match. But we, of course, had the minor match, a very significant minor match. So we were all over that. And, of course, we had to keep picking over the bones of the Kerry game. I mean, come on, it's the summertime. We have to be able to do that. And plus, you had your little bonus piece about the All-Ireland competition, which... we have a Mayo winner, so we have one. We mightn't have the All-Ireland in the bag yet, but we have the All-Islands, which is very nice. So we'll get to that later on.
Ah, yes, indeed. They are among what you're going to hear in terms of highlights of the podcast this week. But let's get the ball rolling straight away. Why wait around? Colin Boyle and Mark O'Shea were our guests with Mike Finnerty the day after the big win over Kerry. And here are just a couple of snippets from that, starting with Colin Boyle on the goals.
Yeah, I'd be a lot more worried, Mike, if we'd no goal chance last Saturday and we lose the game. Obviously, the goal chances, they almost all have the same team. Well, definitely four of them is that they come from Mayo players not being tracked by Kerry defenders. And it takes to the fifth goal chance to Owen McLaughlin, and in fairness to him, Stephen O'Brien, I think it is, switch it off for a second. It's a beautiful hand pass from Ryan O'Donnell to McLaughlin, and he does what the four boys before him didn't do. And he drills it low to the corner. Fairness, he hits it with power, but he places it down to the corner. The other four, really, they're pretty much not straight at Shane Ryan, but they're ones you would expect him to save. So I think that, look, that's something you can work on. That's maybe a small bit of composure. That's, you know, side-footing the ball into the net when you see the keeper of the eyes coming towards you. But that stuff you can work on. You know, that's I'm not going to say an easy fix, but it's certain things you can put right going into the next game, but something to be going after. It's a target. Why not? Of course, was the Mayo performance perfect the last day? No, it wasn't, because I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, we could have easily just conceded two or three goals in that second half as well, and it's a different game. But yeah, for sure, them goal chances are certainly things they'll be going after, I think, against Louth and against Cork.
And from Boiler to a man he battled with on the field and has good old chat off the field on this very podcast, Mark O'Shea. Well, he had this to say on the trap that Mayo could fall into.
We'll go back to Rochford's point. It's still only 2 points, and that's what Mayo have to look at. Like, and I see Colm, he's laughing there, but like, you know, that's the trap that Mayo could fall into now, let's be totally honest, you know, and think that, oh, they've beaten the All-Ireland champions in Killarney, and that's the rock maybe possibly that they have perished on in the past, because it won't be any good until Mayo have their hands on Sam Maguire. And that's a fact. Like, and you know, we spoke about during the National League, is this Mayo's year finally? And we were saying, yeah, and next thing the Connacht Championship comes, and all of a sudden the knives are out for Mayo when they lose to Roscommon. And obviously huge. I always felt that the 6-week gap was something that was going to suit Mayo. I thought it was going to suit Tyrone as well, you know, and you know, they ran Galway close. But I still think that Mayo can't lose sight of the next game and the next game. They should win the next two games. There's no doubt about that. If they don't, they have no business even thinking about Sam Maguire. They should definitely win the next two games. And then you're looking at a good, you know, quarterfinal. You know, and you know, you'd be thinking that you take it game by game by game. But
John, it's great to get Mark O'Shea on the pod.
It sure is. And I thought he was excellent in the in that pod after the game. We've obviously had him on previously as well. I loved his honesty. You know, I think even though he did in that clip there have some cautionary words about us and the things we need to avoid in terms of where we go from here, but his honesty about Kerry and where they were at, I think, was brilliant. There was one bit in the pod where Mike said, you know, Mark, when did you figure Kerry were in trouble here and that it wasn't going to happen? And he was thinking about something maybe, you know, 40-50 minutes in. And I loved Mark's reply, because he mentioned the incident right after throwing, when the ball dropped Paddy Clifford picked it up and Aidan just hammered him with the shoulder. And Mark said, yeah, that's when I got a bit concerned. And it's an incident that kind of got lost in everything that came afterwards. And it's not quite up there with Aidan sending Noel O'Leary skittering across the Croke Park pitch. But at the same time, I think it was a significant moment in the day. And it said, like, we're here for business. And it was, you know, a sense of what was to come. And I guess that's the thing about Kerry now. And, you know, and I think we got that a bit with Mark about this is the year after they won the All-Ireland. And I think the fact that we've had Dublin and the six in a row, it has blinded us to the fact that if you go back beyond that, it's been very difficult for teams who've won the All-Ireland to get back up again. Tyrone are the best example. I mean, they never come out to play at all the year after they win the All-Ireland, which kind of makes me a little bit worried about them because they tend to come back again after that. But it is difficult to go again with the same ferocity. And that's something in our next pod later in the week where you were on with Ed McGrail and with Billy Joe. And Ed really captured this very well in terms of the difficulties that Kerry found themselves in and the possibility that they might not be the force they were last year.
Love the chance to get to chat to Edwin and Billy Joe. When you just let them free as well, you were talking about we were never going to let it go without a few more chances to talk football. It was a Mayo one who we were having a bit of fun with, who was telling us all to park it and move on. He said himself afterwards, admission to have rewatched it about six times. So yeah, we had a bit of crack with that. And I think this podcast was a second chance to have a real kind of more technical, analytical view of the game. And Billy Joe was on as well. Before bringing you back in, John, let's have a listen to Billy Joe Padden on Jack Carney.
Yeah, and I suppose we're still learning. We're still learning about what sort of player Jack is. And you know, I've heard, you know, so before you see him play regularly for Mayo, I wouldn't see him Kilmeena play that much. I don't even know if I've seen them other than maybe play. I think they play Kilcommon in a junior championship. That's the only time I would have seen them in person. And you kind of see a fellow of his size. You see his football ability, and you're expecting him to be a traditional midfielder, wanting to get out there and catch ball, wanting to drive on, maybe kick a couple of long range scores. And he's shown us so much more than that. And I think that play that you reference, and it's the same with any sort of piece of high quality play that you see in a game. And it'll kind of, it's not that it'll take your breath away, but you'll kind of, you'll gasp and you'll think, yeah, that was good. That's high quality. That looks good in any environment, in any game, because the ball is breaking. You know, the ball has gone long. You can see him coming. You can see him anticipating where the ball is going to come down. He obviously anticipates right, gets it right. He times his arrival at the breakdown, to use a rugby term, right. Gets in there and gets out of there with pace and power. And it's absolutely perfect. And that can't be perfect all the time, because so much of what he did there was down to his understanding, him gambling as to where the ball would be. I suppose his game intelligence giving him an educated guess as to where the ball is going to come down. And those sort of instincts are absolutely huge. But I think the other thing that I want to, maybe before I let you in, Ed, the one thing I want to say about him is that I've been very impressed with his patience on the ball. You know, he hasn't, the first couple of times, you know, he played full forward, maybe was that last season in games? Obviously, he was very inexperienced. And you see the talent, because you see him making the crazy catch. You see him scoring the crazy point. But out in the half forward line this season, you've seen a very mature type of performance from him. You know, he's got big scores, no doubt about that, handle loads of ball. But he seems to have a good understanding of, okay, now is the time for me to just play it to one side and go and find a pocket of space again. Now I actually, it's time for me, there's nothing in front of me, I'm going to go back 15 metres with it and we're going to try the other side of the field. Those sort of decisions that he's making, he doesn't seem to force anything ever. And that's a really, really good attribute to have, that he understands the game that well at this such a young age. When you consider that he's playing into blanket defences at all times, it's very easy for a young player to try and make things happen too soon and actually force play into turnovers. But he hasn't done that at all. Very impressive.
I suppose not a lot changed in terms of my perception of Mayo and how Mayo played. But having, I suppose, read a few pieces, having listened to a couple of podcasts, I had heard a lot of talk about, you know, and I saw this in the immediate aftermath, that it was under par Kerry rather than positives for Mayo. And so I was watching it to see, and I felt that on the day that Kerry were a little bit flat, but the more I watched it, watching back, the more I realised Kerry were very, very poor on the day. And, you know, I think a lot of time people say, it, you know, they weren't let play and so on and so forth. But, like, they were let play because Mayo let teams play. You know, Mayo aren't overly defensive. And I think if you look at a number of things the last day or watching back, there's very few, for a team that's chasing the game throughout, there's very, very few physical clashes. There's very few high energy turnovers or frantic turnovers. I think there's one stage there where Conor Loftus is dispossessed or overcarries the ball from a short kick out. But there's very few of those. There's very few Kerry players, with the extremely honourable exception of David Clifford and Shane Ryan, who can say that they could be happy with their performances. And even from the sideline, very slow to make changes. The more I looked at it, the more I was thinking Mayo actually should have won this by a bit more, which I think we all probably saw at the time. But and Kerry's, I just felt they were very passive, they were very flat. And I know Paddy Andrews afterwards said that, you know, you shouldn't ever be questioning a team's hunger because they're defending the All-Ireland. But, like, I think we have to remember that teams historically, with the exception of the Dublin six in a row team, have really struggled the year after winning an All-Ireland. You know, it was a long time. It was, you went back to 19, I think Kerry did it twice in 08 and 09, and then you were going back to Cork in 89 and 90 for defending the All-Ireland title. Like, Dublin are an extreme outlier in what they managed to do. But if you think back to 2012, 2014, we were going into those years thinking this is the year to go because Dublin had won an All-Ireland the previous year. That was the kind of viewpoint at the time. You know, little did we know what they were going to go on and do. But I think we're seeing that with Kerry. I think we're just seeing that the edge that they had last year and the want and the drive. These things are variables. They don't stay constant. They cannot stay constant. We're all humans. We're all fallible. And I think, you know, when Mayo came with it the last day, and Mayo were, you know, clearly targeted this game. Páirc O'Hara said this in an interview 3 or 4 weeks ago, that they were targeting the first game, playing a provincial winner. And you could see that in their approach. Kerry just couldn't come up with the answers. And so I don't know what to call it, an asterisk, because you're still beating the All-Ireland champions down in Killarney after losing to Roscommon. But certainly it's Mayo will find tougher games than what they found the last day. I think that's the conclusion I would have drawn, having watched it back. I was just I was very surprised by how flat Kerry were.
Some great stuff in that podcast. But, you know, they're the games you do rewatch again, John. I presume you did the same. I presume you took some time to sit down and watch the whole game again.
Oh, absolutely. I did. When I got back from Killarney that night, I watched it. And I think I needed to rewatch it because of where we were on the terrace, you know, because we only had a partial view. We saw obviously down the town end, we saw everything very, very clearly. But at the other end, particularly Clifford's goal chances, we could just see there was a scramble going on in the far distance there. You couldn't really see what was going on. So it was absolutely necessary to rewatch it. And anyway, look, you'll always rewatch the games you win. I tend not to rewatch the ones we don't win, if I'm honest. But the ones you win, of course, you know, I might even watch it again before the Loud match. You never know.
It's good. It'd be good background music by the third time. Just have it on in the background there when you're cooking or whatever. Anyway, enough of that. We do need to move on. I think Mayo won might be right at this stage. speaking of moving on, just before the weekend, we did kind of a bonus pod, which was nice to do with Olaf Gill, friend of the podcast now, but also a key factor in helping organise the Clare Island All Islands. The Clare Island hosting of the All-Ireland Championships. He was among a superb committee and also on the field as well. So here he is chatting to me just to lay it out for you.
Yes, Rob. So every year, all the offshore islands that have a big enough population, let's say, either living on the island or through their diaspora to put in a team, compete in the All-Ireland football, Gaelic football tournament. Men's and women's teams compete. It's a really wonderful occasion, a very competitive sporting occasion, but also it's kind of has a much wider resonance for the Islanders. It means that people are coming together from islands ranging from Donegal to Mayo, Galway down to Cork. And it's really a kind of a unique celebration of island culture and the island way of life. This year is the 25th anniversary. The wow. First one was held in 1998 on Clare Island, and it's coming back now for the fourth time to Clare Island again. So we're extremely proud to be holding it. There's an enormous amount of effort and organization goes into making something like this happen, because you're dealing with an influx of hundreds of people from the other islands. So, for example, we wouldn't have enough regular accommodation, tourist accommodation on Clare Island to cater for everyone. So, you know, people are freeing up their rooms, people are freeing up their floors. We've borrowed the glamping tents from our great neighbours in Inishturk and put them in a field near the pitch. So it's an all hands on deck job, and we're very excited, Rob.
And John, he had a big role to play in the weekend as well.
Oh, he did. I was looking. There was an article by Áine Ryan, ex Mayo News writer for the Irish Times, who was a lovely piece in it yesterday about the All Islands tournament. And she imparted the piece of knowledge that Olaf Gill was the player of the tournament. So not only was he key organizer of it, flew in from Kazakhstan. Did he? Is that true? I think I read that. And some other player on the Clare Island team came in from Canada and was going straight back out again. So extraordinary event. I think every time Clare Island have hosted it, they've won it, and they won it again this time. So yeah, it sounds like a great weekend. And Clare Island is such a fabulous place. I've been there. We had a big crowd of adults and kids going out there some years ago, and we did two New Year's out in Clare Island. And I remember when we were leaving the second time, we couldn't see Ireland. You know, the fog was so low. It's a fabulous place. It's such a beautiful, fabulous place. Never been there in the summertime, but I can only imagine what it would be like, because it's a lovely. The pitch is kind of very close to the harbour there, and just great. Sounds like a really great tournament, and it was great to give that a shout out on the pod as well.
Yeah, I think they had ended quite a run as well, maybe a decade or so without winning it. So that meant a lot. I can debunk that Kazakhstan theory. No, he came from Dublin. He has travelled the world, I'm sure, before, but he is living in Dublin now. So we don't want to add to the myth anymore. I mean, player of the tournament is enough. But yeah, great stuff. And incredible. The population per square mile of Clare Island on Saturday night, it was probably up there with Netherlands or somewhere. Who knows? Enough of that. Before you and I get to kind of set the scene for what's to come, John, this week, the Mayo Miners, before we hear some audio, you couldn't go, but they delivered, even in your absence, a fantastic victory over Galway side to push them all the way in the group game. But Mayo pulled clear in this one in the second half.
Yeah, they did pull clear, Rob, and won decisively. I wasn't at it, sadly. I was going to a wedding on Saturday down into hurling country as well, Munster hurling country. Clare and Limerick people, so that I was in a different zone altogether at the weekend. But I did get to see the game, and it was funny, actually completely changed after half time, didn't it? Because very, very close game in the first half, but Boyd pulled away very, very impressively and won rather comfortably at the finish. So sorry, pity I wasn't there to see it, but we have an All-Ireland quarter final to look forward to now. And hopefully that's not the last game either.
Yeah, Mike Finnerty was there with Nigel Reap, full podcast and some great stuff there. They can give you everything you need to know. But afterwards, Mike, as always, gets a chance to talk to Sean Dean. Here's a little clip of it.
If I was to ask you a real old school question and say, what won that game for you tonight? If you were to boil it down to one thing, one reason, what do you firmly believe was the difference maybe between the teams?
Hunger. A will to win. We brought the cup down. There was no way we weren't bringing it home. No way we weren't bringing it home. Like, you know, we had, you know, we used different mantras and that sort of stuff. So the big thing was get Rio in the stand. Get Rio up the steps. That's what we spoke about all week. Like, you know, that is to visualise that. What would that be like? Like, and, you know, we Galway are a very, very good side. And, you know, we know from the past you can win these games and you can meet them again and the result can be a little bit different. So we're going to enjoy tonight, but we're not going to get carried away because the Connacht, I suppose, campaign is over. Mm-hmm. And now we're going into the All-Ireland Series, which is a new competition. So we're going into a new competition. There are two cups on offer. And, you know, we will obviously do all we possibly can to make sure that we have the two cups, which will be a big, big challenge. I know it will be. But, you know, we have to be ambitious in terms of obviously what we're looking to do. And, you know, the guys are on board with that, which is great.
The Mayo Minor manager, Sean Dean, a very happy man. Two Connacht titles in two seasons from him to a voice that's going to sound very familiar to some of our listeners of, you know, let's say my vintage and older. Here's Rio Mortimer. And yeah, you wouldn't know he's a Mortimer, would you?
So Rio Mortimer, Mayo captain, Connacht championship winning captain. How does that sound?
There's a nice ring to that now, I can't lie, but... We knew if we came into this game with our heads right and with the team that we had, we knew we could win the game. So it was about the performance, and I feel like we got through them in the end. We stuck to our game plan and we got the scores we needed to win the game. So can't lie, but it's a nice one to get.
What was the whole experience like for you? The build-up, maybe the hours leading up to the game and the game itself?
No, it was relaxed. I hadn't much nerves at all, and I was really composed and relaxed in the rest of them. A few of the boys were jittery enough, all right, with kind of final and the lot. But being here last year, I sort of knew what the feeling was like and just tried to tell them that it's just another game. Yeah. Keep playing. We know what our style of football is and we know how to beat teams. So if we stuck to our game plan, we could break them down, and that's what we did in the end.
What kind of a game was it like to play in? Because obviously they come out fast and they set the early pace. Then they're still ahead at half time, but obviously you're right in it. And then the second half just kind of takes on a life of its own.
Yeah, no, like... We said at half time we had plenty of shots. I'm not sure what the conversion rate was, but we weren't taking many of our scores and we were only a point down. So we knew if we could up the work rate around the middle, get a couple of turnovers on them and start going at them with a real pace and real intensity, we could break them down. And it showed in the second half. Both goals were perfect examples. We went straight through the middle with pace and aggression, and that's where a lot of our scores came from, just going hard at them, sticking to our own game plan. We knew what we had to do and we got it done.
What does it mean to you personally to be captain of this team?
Yeah, no, it means a lot, of course. Like, this group, we knew when we got together in January, this is a special group. There's a lot of talent in this group and a lot of very good players and great people too. So to be named captain was obviously a great privilege, but I'm honoured to lead these boys out into any game and any battle ahead that will come surely down the line in 2 weeks' time, starting with the quarter.
We often talk about watching you guys playing football, how old it makes some of us feel, because I remember watching your dad and your uncles playing minor for Mayo, and it doesn't seem that long ago. You've got a very famous surname, and obviously you come from a long line of very, very good footballers. Any advice from your uncles or your dad that, you know, you put into practice tonight?
Yeah, look, it's probably my biggest supporters as well as my biggest enemies at times with some of the stuff that we do, we tell one another. But no, some of the advice he gives me is it's unmatchable for some of the stuff you can get elsewhere. Like, it's positional sense and common knowledge too sometimes in big games and big moments, and stuff like that can get you through a game like tonight where it's nip and tuck. They got a goal, come back into it, but we kept ahead, and just simple stuff, keeping the ball, staying calm, not panicking, and stuff like that gets you through tight games. And I can't lie, a bit of it probably comes from that side of the family, all right. So
I'll be chatting to your manager now in a couple of minutes. Before he comes over, you can praise him all you want. Sean Dean and the backroom team, I know they have a lot of time for you guys, and Sean talks about a family. There's a very special kind of an atmosphere, isn't there? And same last year.
Yeah, Sean is big on family, and a lot of all of our players buy into that, because if you play together as a family, stick together like a group that plays like a family, it's going to be very hard to take any of us down, because if you fight for the man beside you like he's your brother, no team is going to take you down with them, because that fight and that determination to get over the line with your teammates and with our families, it takes us through games, and it's different to what other teams can bring, because that is what ultimately is going to drive us on and keep us going together strong and build like a group.
Absolute brilliant interview with Rio there, coming across superbly well, but also I just can't get over John, how it just was like some sort of like, I don't know, do you remember Back to the Future when they jump back, Marty McFly goes back, and everyone's, it's just a kind of a slightly different version of themselves 30 years later. That's what's going on there, I reckon. And he's playing like Kenneth Mortimer as well, which is probably no harm.
He is, yeah. And the point he got before halftime was a dinger, wasn't it? Because they needed it at that stage. But I thought what was really interesting in the interview was that he was able to, and what age is he? 17, I'm guessing, yeah. Right? So he was the old head on the team. He was saying, you know, Mike asked him, was he nervous? And he said, no, not at all. I'd been there last year, and he was able to settle some of the guys who would have been nervous. So already he's such a leader as a footballer, and he's obviously the leader of this team. So yeah, and spoke very, very well there, and he really is a chip off the old block, isn't he?
Absolutely. Mayo Miners out again, I think, on the weekend, second weekend of June, against Monaghan, because they lost
Monaghan. Yeah, interesting. Derry have now won the senior and minor Ulster titles on the abomination that is the penalty shootout, which is just shocking. You know, Monaghan beat Tyrone in the semi-final on a shootout and then lost to Derry. So I guess the thing we should be saying to the lads is practice the penalties, you know, because it seems to be there's an air of inevitability about it. I mean, that's a tricky assignment for us, because normally when you go into an All-Ireland quarter-final as a provincial champion, you're coming in to play a team who has lost their previous game and will be feeling down in the gob. I'm not sure Monaghan will be that down in the mouth, having just lost out on penalties. Sure, I mean, they'd like to have won the Ulster title, but they're obviously a match for Derry. So we're effectively playing a team that's on a par with the Ulster champions. And that'll be a tricky enough assignment, I think.
All right, we've got some great stuff coming up this week to set the scene for round two of the All-Ireland group stages, where Mayo will take on Louth on Sunday at 2:00 in McHale Park. A kind of a overview look at the championship and the prospects for Mayo coming up first. And then here comes the weekend, returning to your pod waves later in the week. No minor podcast this weekend, so it'll be all about the senior side going into the weekend. So that's what people have to look forward to. All you have to do is log on to patreon.com/mayopodcasts and sign up, a fiver plus VAT, sure jeepers, that's barely two cups of coffee, and you can get all the audio you need during the season. And if you're kind of wondering, what is Patreon? Just an app. Log on to your app store, search for Patreon, and you'll find it. Once you download it, you can sign in and search for Mayo Podcast, and you will find us with all your Mayo football needs. In the meantime, John, we're looking forward to Louth, who've taken a bit of a key defeat really against Cork. From their perspective now, mm-hmm. The only way they can go through is if three teams are tied on 2 points and they win one game, or if they win two games. So they gotta go all guns blazing for a remarkable turnaround, because Cork will have the head-to-head on them as well. That's heartbreaking. What do you reckon? Is there a backlash in them?
It's hard to know, because obviously none of us saw that game, because it wasn't televised and it wasn't on GAA. So I think we're only going off word of mouth in terms of how it went. 119 to 117, so strikes you as an open game. You know, I'm not sure Louth will come to Castlebar with the same kind of open approach. So it could be a very different game. I think they will try to, you know, they'll certainly try to keep it cagey, and they'll try to hold us and frustrate us. It's a huge ask for them, though. They're looking at matches against us and against Kerry, and they have to get something certainly from one and possibly from both. So that's a pretty big ask. The other game in the group, Rob, I'm really intrigued about this, because Cork did win. They didn't win by much, but they won, and that puts them in a great position. And they know that if they beat Kerry next weekend, they've probably struck a mortal blow upon them for this year. Even though Kerry could more than likely would still advance, you'd still fancy them to beat Louth. But they're really looking at tough matches thereafter, and definitely no soft all Ireland this year. So that's all very, very interesting. So, I mean, you know, the word for the first round was, you know, there was no jeopardy. Jeopardy is going to start knocking on the door this weekend, I think.
It's a funny one for Mayo, John, because I think pretty much no matter what happens, they're going to have to get a result against both Louth and Cork, really, to be sure.
For sure. I mean, look, we have to top the group now at this stage. I mean, having beaten Kerry, it would be such a slide back not to top the group. Cork are a danger for us, though, you know, because when you think about it, we only started beating them in 2011. Beat them decisively in 2011. Very, very close game in 2014. People forget about that game in 2014. I think we're all blinded by Limerick and Kerry and all that. And we only scraped by Cork in the quarterfinal. And 2017, of course, they took us to extra time. So Cork will not be afraid of us, and Cork will have a go at us. Now, obviously, we both have matches to play beforehand, and that's going to inform how we go into that game. But yeah, the objective for us has to be win the three games, qualify directly for the quarterfinal, and qualify for a better quarterfinal than we would otherwise get.
So I presume you wouldn't even dare let your mind start getting into the fact that if we get a big win against Louth, it'll allow us to have a bit of a cushion should we lose to Cork, and it's a three-way tie and the points different. You're like, nonsense, nonsense, nonsense.
No.
Yeah,
and I think we're in that mood. Mm. You know, I think there's no, you know, people say, we could afford to rotate. No way, Jose. Like, we'll rotate as we need to rotate at this stage. It's eyes on the prize from now on, I think. And I think that's increasingly the way for our teams. And I think, just going back to the earlier pods, you know, I think that's the issue that Kerry have, is how do you get up now against teams who are increasingly focused on getting to the business end?
There's no denying it, John. The championship is starting to open up more, because Dublin are doing something they haven't done for 12, 15 years. They're just being very, very nervous and shaky about beating teams like Kildare in the Leinster semi-final, for example, and struggled to hold a lead against Roscommon, and we're lucky to not lose that game. Just a different side, and I suppose we've beaten Kerry as well.
Yeah, and I mean, the Roscommon thing, I think we're all kind of being wise after the event with Roscommon, but Roscommon played 9 Division 1 games effectively this year. Like ourselves, they only played Division 1 matches this year. And you know, surprise, surprise, they were up for Dublin, who have been playing weaker teams for a full year. And they came with a Division 1 attitude, and they should have won it. Now, the only thing is, they did try a lot of the same tactics as they did against us, but the difference was hot day in Croke Park, and you could see they were cramping up at the end. They couldn't maintain it right to the finish. But Dublin were poor yesterday, and they were damn lucky to get away with the point out of that game, I thought. Now, it just makes it fascinating from here on, right? Because everyone's on 1 point. I think Roscommon, particularly with Davy Burke, will be absolutely gunning for Kildare in the final match. But they will know if they can outshoot the Dubs against Sligo and Kildare, then they could top their group. And like us, be in a sweet spot going into the quarter final. The other kind of subtext there as well is Sligo versus Dublin on neutral ground. Where is that neutral ground going to be? I don't think Sligo are going to go meekly to Croke Park for that one. So lots of interesting little subplots starting to emerge as we go through these group stages.
Yeah, it's hard to know where it's going to go. I do think it needs a little bit of an edge, and I think that's going to emerge this weekend. Cork Kerry will get the ball rolling, an early throw in. Final thoughts, what's McHale Park going to be like? Do you think there'll be that extra few thousand off the back of that Kerry win? Is the buzz back?
Oh, geez, there should be. There has to be. Look, Matt Aaron are already saying the weather's going to be good. They're saying no break in the weather for at least 10 days. So that tells you it's going to be a good day at McHale Park on Sunday. And if we can't get a big Mayo crowd out on a fine summer's day for a championship match, there's something wrong.
And you can hear all on the Mayo Football Podcast on patreon.com/MayoPodcast is where you will get it. That's where all the fun and games happen. On Sunday, after the contest, you will have a Final Whistle podcast. Before that, we'll have two pods as well. John, we couldn't do more for these people. We love doing it, though. And I presume the blog is hopping as well.
Oh, it is, of course, yeah. And I mean, the pod should be great on the day. We've had lots of those. Like, the minor ones have been brilliant. I've really enjoyed being part of those ones. But the one on Sunday, you know, is going to be, it'll be hot off the griddle straight after the match is over. And we're obviously all hoping that we're going to be reviewing another positive result. But that's one for club members to get their teeth into at some point later on Sunday.
Brilliant stuff. Thanks, John. Thanks for you listening, folks. That's just the week that was on the Mayo Football Podcast. Patreon.com/MayoPodcast will get us. We'll talk to you next week.